time for another edition of Right at Home, brought home to you by University of Iowa Community Credit Union. Your community, your credit union. We're joined, as we always are, by local realtor Bombi Vaughn, man about town, former tow truck driver in Scafflaw, Matt Cargiolotti.
I love driving tow truck. That was like an awesome job. It was.
You've led so many lives.
Not so many. Just one.
No. Well, yes, but there's been so many different compartmentalizations of them.
Yeah, I have manifestations?
No, just whatever.
Okay,
lots
sure.
of different parts to it.
Like little different boxes?
That's it.
Oh, yeah, no, you're
was
right.
Was that before or after you were the lounge lizard?
It was a little of both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't want to go there.
It's all right.
We're going to talk law today.
Yeah, we are. And I actually have a good friend of mine and a local attorney, Clinton Follett, is here today from Chernetsky, Lucina, Clower, and Follett. And I would want him to come in, so I'm really glad you can make it. Good morning.
Morning, Matt. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I kind of want to talk a little bit about divorce and real estate. I mean, it's a big thing. Real estate agents are constantly being inundated with questions about divorce. And like, when should I do this? How can I do this? You know, when can I buy a house? Do I need to wait to buy a house till after this is done? I mean, there's so many different pieces and like, you know, compartments.
Yes, different compartments, all these different little things.
There. Right. So there's so many different parts of making sure, like, number one, to be able to, you know, advise them appropriately to, like, hey, talk to your attorney, you know, before you go through these steps. But what can you tell me about, like, you know, once they get to you for that piece of trying to figure out when to, proceed with their divorce process, like, when those effects in real estate really come into play?
Yeah, so typically right off the bat, what we got to do is, you know, analyze what is going to be the marital property to be divided up as part of the dissolution proceeding. So, I mean, Iowa is a community property state, so everything that, you know, was accumulated value during the course of the marriage is going to get split up. And typically the biggest asset we're dealing with is the real estate, the house.
Right. I mean, there's other assets involved, I would imagine, too, like 401ks and things like that, too. But now for that real estate, so when would be an appropriate time for a couple who are maybe, let's say, going through a divorce to be able to list that property to sell it?
It really depends on what the property or what the people can agree to. There's no right or wrong answer.
Sure.
I mean, if there's not a lot of, sort of liquid equity as far as the dissolution proceedings go,
right.
You know, you may want to list that house now, have the people sell the house, get
right.
some liquid assets, and then split it up and have the people go to either apartments or, you know, use those, use the equity they'd built up in the property they just sold to purchase new real estate.
I see.
Is there a benefit to, you know, one side or the other just buying the other one out of the house, or is it just better to just sell it to some third party and be clear of it?
I mean, if you can have one of the parties keep the house, that tends to be what ends up happening, just because there's sentimental value to the parents and to if there's kids as well. So if you have the assets to be able to purchase out that equity, that tends to be beneficial. Or you can even offset the equity by just weighing all of the other assets, where you might take, you know, less of a certain bank account in order to balance everything out as far as the equity goes.
It seems like, kind of like I always say, like one of the gifts of real estate is that almost anything's possible through, you know, mutual agreement. And from my perspective, as I've kind of like helped many people and like their divorce needs over the years, like, wow. I mean, it seems like that's just like a constant piece of real estate is, as well as these change of life moments, right? From like, you know, having a kid, getting a divorce, somebody passed away, I got a new job, new community, you know, I mean, there's all this different family change, right? These major life changes. And so, but no, I mean, it's, you know, thinking about like, even when, you know, those assets are going to be split up later on, or what can be done with them. So let's say, for example, one person stays in the house, Clint, and like, but they want to, you know, potentially want to be able to, the other person wants to be able to buy a house, but probably wouldn't be able to until that divorce is final, unless they agree otherwise mid-process. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, and I mean, what you were talking about as far as, you know, trying to come to an agreement, I mean, that's a huge part of family law proceedings is trying to, you know, get the parties to come to some sort of an agreement. And in fact, in Iowa, they actually force you to sit down with a mediator and talk things out and attempt to settle things. And there's a real push to make it sort of a collaborative process as opposed to sort of the adversarial process you normally think of in court.
Sure.
Now, I was going to say, because the irony just dripping upon me here was the fact that you're talking mutual agreement and divorce in the same sentence. And it's all just like, not always a thing.
I mean, it's like a partnership in a business at that same time, too, right? And so thinking about how those partnerships can be put together and how they can be taken back apart. I mean, that same kind of construction goes into both sides of that. And that's, I mean, at least from my perspective, I mean, there's so many different families that I've kind of helped, you know, come together or make their choices as they move on. It is weird though. It's a little awkward at first. You can become acclimated to it after a while though, but
has there been any instances where somebody, a couple is divorcing, but they're going to say, no, we're not going to sell the house. I'm going to retain joint ownership of this property or is that just never going to happen?
It's probably not a great idea.
I wouldn't recommend people do that. No. I don't think I've ever had a case where that's happened. But
maybe not a house, maybe just real estate or property. You know, maybe there's an investment property or something like that that people, you know, own jointly, and so they can share in the revenue. They don't have to live together. They can still be joint ownership.
And that might be something a little bit different too, where at that point you're essentially talking about being business partners.
Yeah.
So like probably like a co-owner in a business. I mean, splitting something like that up would probably take, you know, a little bit more arrangement.
No, and I have had cases where people have been joint owners of a business and they are able to successfully continue with that joint ownership even once they've not married anymore.
Yeah. I worked at a radio station where the husband and wife owned the radio station, and one thing led to another, and they got a divorce, but they still co-owned the radio station. It made for a real interesting days.
It was probably awkward at times, I'm sure.
Every day was awkward.
But, I mean,
since the third party involved actually worked at the radio station as well.
I always say that the fact, some of the basic facts are is, like, these two people found their way to be together, right, and to coexist for this amount of time. And sometimes, I mean, especially if there's kids involved, they're going to have a continued presence in each other's relationship anyway. So, is really like having a business going to be that much different than, really trying to figure out what time and financial obligations are for even parenting? They're probably going to be pretty similar. So they're going to have a lot of things that cross over back and forth.
Yeah, and I mean, there's two pretty good, pretty big reasons why you'd want to come to some sort of agreement as part of the divorce. First one being is that, you know, you may not get exactly what you want, but you know exactly what you're going to get.
Sure.
If you end up going to trial, going to court, you're just letting a judge decide based on what they think, and you have no idea what you're going to get. And then the other big issue is the more you fight about stuff, the higher your attorney's fees are going to be. Which I'm fine with, but most people would prefer to keep that bill as low as possible.
I mean, there's one thing I've learned over the years is that when you need an attorney, they're worth every penny.
is that something that should be set up like in a prenup then, as an agreement?
That's a great question.
I mean, you hate to start off a marriage by anticipating it's going to end badly.
Sure.
But still, is that something that you should maybe consider setting up an agreement ahead of time when you're going into this, that if this would something go bad, maybe this person will take it, or this will buy the other one out, or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of benefits to a prenup. I mean, a lot of people have preconceived notions about what a prenup is, and, you know, there's sort of a stigma attached to it.
Sure.
That, you know, if you prepare for something, you're anticipating it's going to happen. Well, I mean, it's the same way that if you buy car insurance, you're not anticipating. You hope you never get in that car accident. It's the same thing with the prenup. You know, you're investing in sort of that preparation time. And actually, I mean, you're giving it thought beforehand, which I think shows even more, you know, planning, more dedication to it.
I think you just hit on a million-dollar idea. marriage insurance.
Well, that's essentially what a prenup is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. The collision, though, is really the worst part.
There's got to be some kind of insurance for something like that too out there, and they'll sell insurance for just about anything, right?
Yeah. So what if I don't know why I'm asking about this?
I don't know either.
Married, I'm again, yeah. Honey, pay no attention. I'm spitballing here, hon. But what about if you is there something that you can do? Say you know you're heading down that rocky road here, and it's an eventuality. You want to keep the house. Is there anything you can do ahead of time to kind of set that up so that maybe you have the ability to get that?
Yeah, you'd probably want to talk to your banker, mortgage company, and look into what your refinancing options are.
Right.
Because ultimately, if you end up keeping the house, you're going to have to take your soon-to-be ex-spouse off the mortgage. And so whether or not you're financially able to do that is a big question. I've had people try to take over the house when they're in no position to do so, and the bank ends up foreclosing on the house, and then nobody gets the house.
Right.
Talk to your banker, look into refinancing options. And then you also probably want to start keeping track of stuff. Mm. I mean, you want to look at your debts, make sure there's no debts that are hiding, if you're able to do that. You probably want to split up your bank accounts, get things out of joint, because if you know if you're heading down that route, you want to protect, sort of you want to build up that little nest egg for yourself when you no longer have those two incomes to rely off of.
Mm. Those are all pretty great ideas.
Yeah. But that wouldn't fall under the the law where you can split everything 50-50?
Well, it's not exactly
50-50. Community property, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's not exactly 50-50. They call it, it's an equitable split. So it's equitable, yeah. Not equal.
So judgment call then.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You don't want to go on a giant spending spree either, because if you end up spending more than your, 50-50, close to that allocation, you're going to end up having to pay some of it back.
So that is behavior that, I have seen clients have issues with that, which is like, well, suddenly, they're no longer together, and then there's this gigantic problem where one person's spending an incredible amount of money, and then what happens? In the end, does that actually wash out? And usually the case is, as I think exactly as you said, no, they're still going to end up having to kind of bring that back of some sort, to some degree.
What if, because obviously somebody occupies, husband, wife, usually the wife is the one who ends up being the occupant of the home, the husband moves out. I'm assuming that's how that works.
I don't.
Is that?
I wouldn't make that.
Am I just?
It's probably just a preconceived thing, Tim. That's okay.
Okay.
It's a bias.
All right. Well, okay. So, but the one person is there. So that one person in the house suddenly decides, I hated those curtains. Those curtains remind me of my spouse. I don't want. I clear that out. And as long as I'm doing that, I'm going to change the decoration here, and I'm going to move stuff in. Does that expense then cut off while this process is going on, or is that still, someone decides to redo the kitchen before this actually comes to adjudication, how does that, who ends up on the hook on that?
Otherwise, you're saying is that if a mutual asset is being improved,
yes,
through
through
community money by the two of the, of the two of them by one.
Yeah.
I don't, that would be a tough question for me to answer.
And it's a tough question for me to answer too. It really would just be a matter of balancing everything out and seeing, did you spend joint money improving the value of that property, or did you spend, your own personal money improving it, and then trying to either come to an agreement on, what is the value that you alone are attributed and what's the value that the other spouse is attributed. Because, you're weighing, 75 different things and trying to get it as close to balanced as you can.
So what's something that comes up from time to time that I end up having to explain to people is a piece of dower rights that when somebody owns something with as joint tenants or as a spouse, right? If a couple is married and one of them decides to sell the property and goes under contract with somebody, and they are married, there's no prenup involved, and it's deeded as joint tenants. Is that going to be a valid contract? Can that one person sell that property without the other one? And usually, I haven't seen it go the other way, which is no. It will take both of the owners to be able to sign that contract, for that contract to be a valid instrument, for that to be able to be conveyed. And I'm not sure if something like that comes up a lot for you with him. It's just a question that I usually get on the front end, which is like, can I sell it without him? Can I sell it without her? I'm like, well, are you divorced yet? No. Do you have a quitclaim deed yet? No. Then no, you can't.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't be able to sell that without both people signing off. And in fact, one person entering into that contract may be able to bind that one person without binding the other spouse. And, you know, if you really wanted to push it, you could wind up in a huge breach of contract action in court.
And, right. doesn't that give the other person, the non-contracted spouse, a lot of leverage there then? As far as, oh, you entered into this, I don't necessarily have to sign off on this, and so now let's make a deal.
Yeah, now I'm not going to sign off on it until you give me the car and more money from the bank account.
And half the kid, wow. Okay.
You know, the never-ending landscape of family law, man, wow.
Yeah, and as far as the dower rights go, I mean, that brings up something sort of at the tail end of, you know, real estate transactions is I may be looking through an abstract and I see a dissolution proceeding and I see a quitclaim deed from, you know, or, a deed from one spouse to, you know, two other married people.
Sure.
And I don't see that, you know, other spouse there. Well, right. That's going to be a title objection because you need to get rid of those dower rights to have full.
Be able to have full marketable title. Yeah.
Exactly.
Fascinating. Wow. Awesome. Thank you, Clint. I really, really appreciate this. Clinton Follett with Chernetsky, Lucina, Clower, and Follett. Your new partner, right?
Yep. As of January 1. So
congratulations.
That's thank you very much.
A lot of hard work for you to get to that point.
Yeah. A lot of hours, a lot of sleepless nights.
Now, when that happens, do they stick you with the bill for changing all the stationery and everything?
We split that, but that is a lot of costs at the beginning. Yeah.
You're right at home. We'll be back right after this from University of Iowa Community Credit Union.
University of Iowa Community Credit Union is the number one mortgage lender in Iowa. That's because they offer low rates, no 1% origination fee, and 100% financing. For residents living in Grinnell and the surrounding areas, they also have a local mortgage expert right in Grinnell. Aaron Black has 17 years of mortgage experience and is ready to serve you from their office at 705 6th Avenue in downtown Grinnell. Contact Aaron at 236-1801 or online at uicmortgage.com to get started with your purchase and refinance mortgage loan. UICCU is an equal housing lender.
Back on Right at Home. Are you live streaming this on your Facebook
page? Yeah. Hello.
How'd that go last week?
I don't know. I'm not really sure how it works.
I
shouldn't say that. I do kind of understand how it works. This is actually streaming live on our...
This was on Katie's idea, was it?
Yeah. This is it's a bigger idea than that. It was Katie's and Jess, and then there's, the space in my head consumed with marketing needs to make more room for the rest of it that I need for marketing.
Okay. We don't have any numbers to crunch this week.
We don't, no.
Yeah. We're getting ready to get some January numbers.
Yeah, no, I had an internet connectivity problem this morning when I was trying to get on, and I'm like, this is not working out.
I know a lawyer you can talk to about that if you want to sue.
You know, I think the legals, they can prove that they're within. It's kind of a fascinating thing, actually. I think it's like, even for their bandwidth and speed, they never have to be at 100%. They have to be at like 85% of that or something. And then, Yeah.
With the one we have, it twice nothing is still nothing, so it doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, you could always. I don't know.
Is that libel? Can I get sued for that?
You probably.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's because I was about to do a free log. You know,
and thank you to everybody at Windstream and MediaCom for all the great things that you do to make our lives.
We love
thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. And Verizon. Yeah.
See, I'm not on this, so yeah.
Your voice is man.
I'm just a disembodied voice.
I could tag you.
I'm a ghost.
Oh, God.
And that'll have to do it. Thank goodness for this edition of Right at Home, brought home to you by University of Iowa Community Credit Union, your community, your credit union.
You can't unsee it.
For Clint Follett and Matt Carzolotti, I'm Tim Dill for 1410 KGRN.